excited for the inaugural episode of Ock Talk. We are bringing the king, the master, Ron Tight, is here with us today. Ron, thank you for being
king
here.
King of Ock Talk. It's going to get very awkward.
King of Ock Talk. That's your new title. I'm going to send it to you. You can wear it with pride. If you've been living under a rock and you don't know who Ron Tight is, let me tell you, he is the CEO and founder of Church & State, a Toronto-based advertising agency. You've got clients like Microsoft, Lexus, Johnson & Johnson.
Walmart. Yes, no longer work with Johnson & Johnson. But yeah, we kind of focus on multinational organizations for the most part.
Heavy hitters.
Yeah.
This marketing is not awkward, I'll tell you that much. You're a keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. You're a comedian. Mm-hmm. You're a husband. You're a father. Yeah. And you're the author of Think Do Say.
Yes.
And that's what we're going to talk about today.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm after working on it for the past year, it's nice to be able to talk about it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Finally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, here's the deal.
Okay.
Ron Tight's book does not have an introduction because he tells his readers he respects their time enough to just get to the good stuff right away. So that's what I want to do. I just want to like head into it. I'm just going to hit you with a question.
Do you read an introduction? Like when you get a book? Or do you go like, okay, let's just get to
it. No, you know what? I will go back and read the introduction after I've read the book.
Okay.
So I'll like be like, okay, well, what was going on here?
Yeah, you know? Okay.
So I do skip right past it. Okay. So let's skip right into it. You talk a lot about how you've done ad campaigns in Times Square.
Yep.
And it's hard. It's like, it's easy to buy the space, but hard to get the attention of the people because it's like sensory overload. There's lights everywhere. There's people on the ground. They're making noise. But you also talk about how now Times Square is not just in New York City.
Right.
Like we all have our own little mini Times Square in our pockets. So what do you mean by that? Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, Times Square in 2020?
2020. Well, and by the way, there's going to be like every corporation under the sun is come January is going to launch Vision 2020, right? That's going to be everybody's corporate platform is going to be Vision 2020. Or 2020 vision or whatever. But so I think, you know, Times Square is just such a great metaphor for there's two levels of Times Square. Like on one level, yes, there's this wall of promotion, right? And it's because there's 400,000 people that traipse through Times Square every single day. So everybody wants to be there because you need those eyeballs need something to look at. So that's on one level, all that promotion. But down on the street level, there's this whole other level. And the other level there is like, it's not slick, but there's still people offering you stuff. You know, like curbside entrepreneurs who are saying you want a t-shirt, you want to come to this comedy club, you know, selling everything from recreational drugs and prostitution, right? Like it's just someone telling you the end of the world is coming. And so, you know, like it's just, so on one level, you don't know where to look. On the other level, you don't know who to trust. And why I think that Times Square is not just in Times Square. It used to be this dynamic of a dense urban environment, but now our pocket is like ding, ding, look here, look here, look here, look here. And there's stuff coming in that we're getting LinkedIn invites from people that we don't know. And we're like, do I accept? I don't know if I trust this person. Like, are they going to pitch slap me? Like, so I think it's everywhere. It's in every city you live. It's in it's in your personal life. It's in your corporate life. It's in your family life, everything. Everything now is Times Square. Look here, look here, look here. No clue where to look and no clue who to trust.
Yeah, and trust, that's the big thing. Like your tagline for the book is seize attention in a busy, busy world. Yeah. And build trust in a busy, busy world.
That's right.
And I feel like a lot of modern marketers are going to look at that book and they're going to see the first part, seize attention. They're going to be like, yeah, that's what I want. They're not even going to read the rest of the tagline, but that's really the heart of your message in this book is trust. And so, okay, I want to hear from your perspective, how has modern marketing eroded consumer trust? Like, why do we have so many trust issues, Ron?
I know, everybody's got trust issues. Like, people will, you know, it's not just about getting attention. And a lot of times marketers will say that, right? Well, hey, they're talking about us, so that must be good. You're like, if you just want attention, go kill a puppy. Kill a puppy and see the attention you get. Oh, well, that's not appropriate. Okay. So we're not just, let's scale that back. So yes, it is about attention and trust. I think there's two forces at play. One is there's these macro cultural forces that have eroded trust, which have affected the way people look at corporations and brands. And we're talking you know, Lance Armstrong lied to us. Bill Cosby went from America's dad to America's predator. You know, every politician has sent a dick pic out to the, you know, general citizenry. We've got, you know, politicians lying. We have the Panama Papers not doing anything. We've got CEO compensation going through the roof. You know, Cambridge Analytica stole our data and the Russians stole the election. And we're just like, who do we trust? We can't trust anybody. Yeah. And then a brand comes in and says, trust us. This product is going to be amazing. And consumers are going, spare me. I've heard this before over and over and over again. And it never is.
Right.
It just isn't. And so I think consumers are, even if you get their attention, they're cynical with your pro, like, this is the best thing in the history of the world message.
Yeah. When you talk about the macro businesses, is that like the top side of Times Square? Is that like all these big things that you just mentioned, the politicians and the Panama Papers? And
in some ways, it's also, I think, big corporate enterprise, right? It's the people that can afford the big, yeah, massive, glitzy, yeah, promotional messaging. And we're here, and it looks, right, it looks completely, it does look trustworthy because it's professional.
Right.
But it's down below, it's everybody else going, forget the establishment. I'm the new player on the street. You can trust me. You can trust me. You can trust, right, me. And that's where some of those things are just, they just sound too good to be true because they probably are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. You said something in there that got kind of tucked away, and you talk about this in your book a lot, the concept
dick
of...
Dick pic? You said that got tucked away? Because you had a look on your face that I can't believe you just said that. Sorry. A picture of their crotch region. Is that better?
It's so much better. Okay. My mom watches this show.
Beep. And they send a beep pic, as we can do.
No, I'm keeping it. I'm keeping it. Deal with it, Mom. She's seen
as your mom's with like a, I don't know why she's not going to be watching with a remote, but I picture her with a remote going, pervert, or something.
She's like, why can't you have a nice boy on your show, Rach? Come on. You said the phrase pitch slap.
Yes.
And you talk about that a lot. And what I love in your book is that you acknowledge, like, I didn't come up with this phrase. Yeah. I don't know who came up with this phrase. Anybody, raise your hand, yeah, you know, write Ron tight. But you talk about being pitch slapped and how, you know, all these marketers and big brands are pitch slapping us here, there, and everywhere. We're like, we're getting slapped everywhere we go. Here's the tough one for you.
Okay.
Well, okay, before I ask the tough one, I'm going to ask the easy one.
Sure.
How do you define pitch slap?
A pitch slap is a blatant pitching of your services or your product.
Okay. It's blatant. So blatant. So you don't necessarily define, like, pitch slap isn't inherently a negative thing to you based on that definition.
Maybe I should rethink that definition. It's blatant to the end user.
Right.
So because so here's a perfect example.
Yeah.
I had someone reach out and say, I really want to talk to you, get your advice or something. Like, I'd love to connect. We both work in advertising, you know. And I go, okay, that's you know, we do that all the time, right? And I get on the phone, and the first question is, so you do ads and stuff. Mm-hmm. So do you ever, like do out-of-home advertising? And in my brain... I'm like, and he's going to pitch me his company, which probably does some version of out-of-home advertising,
yeah,
in 5, 4, 3, 2. So it's like, so to me, that was a pitch slap because it was so blatant that that was about to come from him. And it was worse because he was trying to tuck it behind some authentic conversation that he,
right,
genuinely wanted to have. It wasn't a genuine conversation,
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
He had an agenda from the moment he sent the LinkedIn message.
Yeah.
And I gave him the benefit of the doubt. And all he wanted to do was pitch me his service.
And he took advantage of your trust, Ron.
Yeah,
you trusted him.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And he proved your point.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was the easy question. Here's
okay.
the tough one. In
sure.
your years, your illustrious advertising career, and you've done this for a long time.
Yep.
Have you ever pitch slapped someone?
Yeah, of course. I think we, not consciously, I think there's a couple ways you can go about it. One, my agency is called Church and State because we firmly believe that is no longer the separation of church and state, that content and advertising are now unified.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why pitch slap is, I think, a relatively recent phenomenon, because in the past it was like we knew what was an ad.
Yes.
It was a commercial, it was a banner. It was like that thing right there is an ad. I get it.
Yeah.
Now we're not exactly sure what's an ad, what's content. So that's
yeah.
trickier. So have I ever asked for the sale? 100%. I think we need to ask for the sale. But I think the tone of how you do it is that if you consciously make it blatant, you're not trying to hide behind the fact that it's a pitch slap, then I think people are at least seeing it at face value. You're not trying to hoodwink people. You're not trying to fool people.
Right.
So in the email that went out to a small group of people to say, hey, pre-order the book, I literally said, why wait? Pre-order yours now. And if this sounds like a blatant pitch slap, you know, you're right. It is.
Yeah.
Because, and then I just pushed it even further. And I said something like, because I need caring, gorgeous people like you to pre-order. How am I going to game the book ecosystem if I don't have caring, gorgeous people like you pre-order the book? And I'd love to justify it further, but I have to go recruit 500 fake Amazon reviews. Right? So I think if we just go, hey, then I think people can smile at it.
Yes. I love that. So, I mean, we all have to, there's a certain level of, we have to pitch slap each other, but you can like do it with love.
Yeah.
You know, you can, it's a pitch caress, if you will. Okay, cool.
Pitch caress.
All right. I dig
beep,
it.
Beep, beep.
So this is what not to do. We laid the groundwork here. We don't want to be pitch slapping each other. We got to be, more conscious about how we're doing business and doing advertising and doing marketing. And you break this down. You got a three-part process, a formula.
Yep.
Spoiler alert, it's in the title of the book, Think, Do, Say. But I want you to break it down even further for me.
Sure.
What is this three-part framework for building trust back up and grabbing attention in the right way?
Yeah, it's three words. It's really, people are going to be like, that doesn't sound that complicated. And you're right. Because I think that people have tried to put way too much thought into it. And they've tried to come up with stuff that should be flexible across organizations and different people and different cultures, corporate cultures. And I just think we need a flexible system that eliminates the BS that typically goes on and how we try and do these things.
Yeah.
So the think part is that we need to elevate, we have to believe in something. We have to believe in something more than our job title. We have to believe in something more than our product. We have to believe in something more than the thing we sell. Because, like, just come on, in most, like 99.9% of the cases, it's not that special. It's really not that special. And your job title and your response, they're not that special. Other people have them, other people sell them. So let's elevate that to something that people actually care about. And when you do that, you set yourself up for success. Because, you know, if you said, I believe that I need to be a great character comedian or character actress, you wouldn't be doing this. You wouldn't open yourself up, right, to doing things that are not the thing that you traditionally do. So we need to go a little bit broader than that. It's why General Motors is making a bike right now.
Yeah.
I mean, if they said we believe in being the best car manufacturer in the world, they would only ever make cars, which is great when everybody's buying cars. And then not many people buying cars, right? So they need to believe in something greater. So you need to believe in something greater. You need to have a purpose to what you do. The second part, the do, is that that's not enough. A belief is not enough. This isn't church. Nothing wrong with church. But we need to actually take actions and inspire behaviors within our organizations that reinforce that belief. That's where the pudding hits the road, or the proof is in the pudding, or the rubber hits the road, whatever. That's where because all those things that I can read about your beliefs and your values, but I should experience them. I should experience what you believe, and I will only get that through my actions. And those actions are based on who you do it for, what they want you to do, who you do it with. See the flexibility there? Now, if you believe in something greater as a person or as a company, and you behave in a way that reinforces that, that's worth talking about. That really is worth talking about. But if you're going to talk about it, understanding the Times Square environment you're operating in, you should probably be consistent with how you say it. You should probably say it in a compelling way, in an interesting way, in like an authentic and honest way with a little bit of personality maybe. Because if you're just going to state it for the record, it's not going to win the battle for time. So it's about thinking and doing and saying.
You know what's so awesome about this is that because this is the title of the book, it's something, it's just so easy to kind of have. We like to latch on to kind of repeatable ideas. That's why, you know, we have acronyms for stuff.
Right.
So it's so great to be able to like call that up or even have your book sitting on your shelf constantly reminding you, oh, wait a minute, think, do, say. And you can take that and, you know, break it down in the moment when you're creating a new campaign, when you're creating a new service, when you're, you know, going out there to write another press release or create some content for Instagram. It's so, that's what I love so much about this book is that it's this big idea and you go into all this, all these examples about how people can apply it, but it's just something I can grab onto and hold and keep in my pocket. And that's, I mean, there's so many books out there where the title is scintillating, but it's like, but how do I, you know, it, you forget what the book was about. You're like, oh, you should read that. Well, what's it about? I mean, it's just good.
Yeah, that's right.
But this book, it's like, you've got it baked into the title. So that's just, I'm always going to have it at the ready. I'm always going to have it, you know, like in my pocket, ready to go. So I love that part of it.
Nice. Well, I did, you know, for this morning, I did an interview on SiriusXM with Bruce Sellery, who has a show called Mulala. And he's like, what does this have to do with personal finance, you know? And like, it's very much to do with personal finance. If you believe that you want the best life for your kids, because you have to believe in something greater than your finances, right? You're not like, I believe in saving or I believe in spending wisely. You have to believe in something greater. So I believe in that my kids are really important. I want them to have the best life possible. Well, then you have to behave in a way with respect to your personal finances that reinforces that belief. You can't be wasting on stuff. You said you believe that your kids should get it. So why are you wasting all this money on you, right? So you need to build. And who are you doing it for? Well, you're doing it for your children. What do they want you to do? They want you to spend more time with them, not money. And who do you do it with? You do it with your community. You do it with the daycare. You do it with your nanny. You do it with your parent, your co-parent, your partner. So those are the people. And then how do you talk about it? How do you talk about this so that you bring people in the household on side to the stuff that you want to accomplish? So you can even get really specific in our personal lives.
Yeah, I love that, that there is this greater application. Like you talk a lot about marketing, you talk a lot about advertising, but you know, my mom, who's hopefully still watching this interview, could read this book and apply it to her life.
100%.
I love that. Awesome.
Mom, read the book.
You're getting it for Christmas.
Sorry. Everybody's getting it for Christmas. I think my family is dreading that. They're probably, my family right now is probably saying, they're like, we're probably getting a book for Christmas.
Just wait, because you're going to get a ton of like blue, pink, and yellow themed gifts for the rest of your life. I hope you look good in those colors.
Right? I hope so too.
We'll find out. Okay. So you give a lot of examples in your book and you talk a lot in your keynotes and on LinkedIn and in your content about the types of companies that you work with at Church and State, which are these big, you know, the Microsofts of the world. A lot of the people watching OcTalk are small businesses.
Totally.
And so it's hard for them to like open up and read an example about REI, which is a really, you know, you've got a great example of how REI got, you know, shut down on Black Friday and didn't work that day as a way of doing what they think. And then they talk about it and they, you know, it helped their business. But for a small business owner, they look at that and they're like, okay, well, I don't have millions of dollars like REI has. How do I apply this to my, so how would you, let's just say a business coach is reading this book. They got maybe a couple people on their team. It's just, you know, they got a tiny little marketing budget. How would they apply Think, Do, Say to their business?
I'm going to start with something before I answer the question. Is that okay? So, because I 100% agree with you. 100%. So even though our clients are, you know, large multinationals or national organizations, the most of the business, like most people reading this book, aren't those people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing I hate more than when we try and inspire leaders and entrepreneurs and coaches. And typically we go, you know, you should be like, and what do? We go, there's a quote from Churchill. Or Gandhi. And you're like, you want me to be like Gandhi? One of the greatest human beings who ever walked the... I'm Karen. I work in procurement. I'm an executive coach. I'm a yoga instructor. Like, I'm not going to be like Gandhi.
Right.
And I think in the corporate, it's the same thing, right? I mean, I consciously did not mention Apple once in this book. And it's not that I hate Apple. I love it. I think they're a wonderful organization. I think Microsoft has great momentum, full disclosure, they're a client. But I think, I love what Microsoft is doing as well. But I think that Apple is the most successful organization in the history of the world. And that's the example we're going to go, you should live up to that. What? Steve Jobs was not a human being. He was not of this earth. We can't look to those people and organizations for inspiration. So that's the first part. So I'm with you, yoga coach, executive coach. The second part is that it's the exact same thing applies though. That you have to believe in something greater. So an executive coach, you know how many of those, you know, people reach out to me directly who say that they're an executive coach and they'd like to coach me, right? And I've heard it all before.
Oh, they want to coach you.
Yeah. Okay. And because they see a title, right? And they're like, yeah, right. this guy. So there are very few careers where people go, no way. You're the executive coach. I've been looking for you, right?
Right.
There's millions of every type of job. So we need to believe in something greater. And then the way that you take down the establishment, because if you're an executive coach, you're still going against large established organizations, consulting organizations, training organizations, is exactly through those pinpoint actions that clearly indicate that you are different, that you believe in something different. And so if you're an executive coach, but you realize that you're doing it for the telecommunications industry, people in that, well, they have different needs and challenges than somebody else might have in CPG. So you need to take your actions and look at what do those people, what are they like? What do they want you to do specifically? And how can you be nimble enough to do it that you become and offer a unique service? And then tone, this is where your big advantage is as a startup or an entrepreneur, is that the establishment has very scripted methods of communicating with people. They got 8 layers of people. And so as they go through the 8 layers to approve a blog post, it's written by committee and people are like, I don't know that we should say bullshit.
That's my
right?
mom.
That's your mom, right? Can I swear on this? Yeah. I should have asked. Yes, I totally should have asked. I'm sorry. But right, so what we can't, they can't say things like that. There's a legal department. There's, you know, right. and you know, if you're a yoga coach or a yoga instructor, you're not taking your stuff to legal.
Right.
And exactly. So you can that's say it in benefit. Such an authentic yes. and personal way
yes.
that cuts through. When you look at who's taking down the financial institute, or not taking down, but who at least eating into their lunch, it's startups who are talking about money in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And it's all about tone.
Yes. Mm, that's it. We got this advantage. We don't have to go to legal. That's the best. I love it.
See, if I didn't have my own business and I was part of a large multinational agency, I could not appear here and say, I just couldn't. I'd be like, exactly. There'd be like a team of people who'd drag me, they hit me with a club and they drag me out.
Put you on their back, you know, put you under the plane, take you to your next destination. I get it. Yeah, that is, I've never thought about that before, but it truly is. It's, you know, how I can have my show and create the content that I'm creating. If I was working at a big agency, I wouldn't have the freedom that I do. And yeah. So here's
a great example, because I just told you, I mean, I love what you do. I'm so impressed with the amount of quality content that you crank on. It's incredible. Now, we were doing some work with a large pharmaceutical organization who will go unnamed because they're lovely people. And we were doing a bunch of, we were doing a Facebook video. And this establishment, this organization came out of this old world, and the client called and said, we were upset that we didn't get invited to the casting session. And I said, this is a $4,000 Facebook video. You don't get a casting session. Look at a casting session for a $4,000 video. You get who you get. They show up. It's like somebody. Yeah, right. It's an account coordinator.
Right.
It's Nancy. She's in your video because she's here. And so that's the perfect example, right? Like, they can't be that nimble and authentic.
Right.
And so that's your strength. That's the strength of the startup.
Guys, we got this. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Well, I've got 2 more questions for you. One is, you know, one's a little bit fun and one's a little bit more... Like, we're gonna get dark.
Is this one of those back page Vanity Fair quizzes? And you're like, what's your favorite lemon? Lemonade or I don't know. Whatever.
Have you seen those like 70 questions in like 70 seconds? And it's right, like, you know, that's right. What we're gonna do next.
And he's going like, dog.
Yes.
Coke, not Pepsi. McDonald's, not Burger King. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So you dedicate your book to your son, Max. And so I want to imagine a world 25 years from now, Max is all grown up. He's doing his thing.
When I'm 75 years old, there's a bald spot to prove it right there. Yeah. I will be 75.
75 is like the new 40, you know, that's what Click. They're saying. That's Click. What they're saying.
Yeah. Right.
So
you have the age of 40 and 1725. That's when people live till they were 42.
So this is Max's world now that we've, you know, that you've passed along to him. And this is the best case scenario world. This is the world, this is the think, do, say world where every CEO for the last 25 years has read your book and implemented it.
Yeah.
So what does the business world look like for Max now today, 25 years from today, in a think, do, say universe?
That's a great question. I think that 5 weeks ago, the Business Council, 180 CEOs representing 35% of the market cap in the US, got together and redefined the purpose of a corporation. This was a massive deal because for the last 50 years, corporations have looked to an essay written by Milton Friedman, University of Chicago economist in 1970, and who said that the sole responsibility of a corporation is to increase its and maximize its profits.
Yeah.
And that's what it's been for 50 years. And just 5 weeks ago, 180 CEOs got together and said, we do not have one constituent, the shareholder, we have five. The shareholder, the customer, the employee, the suppliers and partners, and the community. Now there is now a moral obligation of the corporation to support the community. And when you look at what is not only moral and ethical behavior by corporations, but successful, like it's not just you should just do the right thing to be ethical and moral, but these are the ones who are cutting through. These are the ones where consumers are saying we want to do business with brands who share our values.
Yeah.
So I think we need corporations to step up. And I think what's really interesting, because it's the ultimate meritocracy, right? That we vote, you can vote with your wallet and fund things that you want to go.
Yes.
And the ramifications of that are far greater and they're far more instantaneous than the ramifications of not voting for somebody or voting for somebody, because that takes 4 to 5 years.
Yes.
So I think corporations will be driving more social policy than government will, because there is the citizens will vote with their wallets and they'll support the products, you know. And, you know, if we want to, let's say we want to end the environmental collapse that is happening right now, all we have to do, every single consumer out there says, I'm not going to buy that. I'm not going to buy that until you meet the standards. There you go. That will change things so ridiculously fast. We shouldn't be waiting for legislation. We should be acting as consumers. And I think that is it. I think that can scare people, that corporations having that much power, but it's not the corporations that have the power. It's the people who are putting money in their pockets. And often that is consumers making decisions. I'd love that.
All right, Max, looking to you, next generation. Help us out here.
Boom.
Yes. Okay, last one.
Okay.
You told me that today you did a keynote.
Yes.
You ended the keynote with brand new material. You went kind of dark, I heard. I don't even know. Actually, he hasn't told me the story yet, but
I did go dark.
Would you tell us the story you told today to end your keynote that was fresh new material? So we're getting it secondhand, but that's cool.
Yeah. Okay, sure. I think, but word of warning to everybody. Okay, first of all, every detail you hear is 100% accurate, okay?
Okay.
100% accurate. And this happened to me, so if you're watching at home, you can laugh. I find this funny on multiple levels, but it's you may be hesitant to laugh, okay?
Okay.
Don't worry, it's not creepy or anything like that. But it is dark. So, this is how it starts. In 2003, my dad passed away. Now, my dad was not an evil guy. But he wasn't a great guy. He was a horrible dad. He wasn't around. He left when I was one, and we didn't ever have a, you know, great relationship. Just an absent relationship. I wasn't beaten or anything like that. So he died in 2003. He did not want a funeral or anything. So all we know, I was on a conference call. They're like, he wants to be cremated. No funeral, no plot, no burial, nothing. Okay, great. Cut to last summer. My assistant calls me and says, someone called the office looking for you. She said, you don't know who she is, but that she has your dad's ashes and wants to know what you want her to do with them. So we'll back it up just a second, okay? So dad dead, she's woman, Mr. Woman has the ashes. My dad got married 4 times. Four kids with number one, who was my mom.
Okay.
He had one child with his second wife, the wife's name was Rita. The daughter's name was Joanne, my half-sister Joanne. Okay. So my dad dies in 2003. Sadly, Rita passes away after that. Okay? Sadly, 3 years ago, my half-sister Joanne passed away. Oh. Very suddenly. She's younger than me, so it's a tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Joanne had a husband and three children who I met once or twice. We didn't really know them. The husband, Joanne's husband, gets a girlfriend. The widowed husband now gets a girlfriend. He then has a mental health episode where he lands in an institution. So there is a girlfriend who knows nobody from this guy's life and his past, who inherits a house and a car and stuff, and she take this saint of a woman is now taking in his children, everything, right? She finds a storage locker, and in the storage locker are the ashes of three people.
Oh my gosh.
Not mixed together. Okay. Three separate boxes ashes of people. My father, his second wife, Rita, and their daughter, Joanne. Okay? This poor woman sees this. She now finds out that there's a sister of Rita somewhere, right? The wife.
Yeah.
She goes, hey, I don't know you. I don't know these people, but I've got these three boxes of ashes. That woman says, we'll take Rita and Joanne, but we're not taking Ron, who's my dad's name, Ron Sr. We're not taking him. So this poor woman is left with a dude. Ashes. She doesn't know. So she Googles his name, Ron Type, also me. Comes up with me. Got your father's ashes. I say, where are you? I live in Huntsville. Okay, great. I have a cottage near there. I go. This is such a Canadian statement. I go and we exchange my dad like a death drug deal in the parking lot of a Tim Hortons.
Oh my God, no.
On Highway 60 in Huntsville. I take my dad, put him in the car. My siblings were coming to the cottage that weekend. We used to call my dad Bozo. That was his nickname. We just called him Bozo. Oh, Bozo called. So I'm sitting there with my siblings and I go, oh my God, guess who's in the car? Who's in the car? Bozo's in the car. What? Yeah, Bozo's in the car. I then take him out and say, he's a human being. We need to treat him with respect. And so, but on the crown, not on my property, in the crown land. And so we have a service. And then we come back to the cottage and playing on the radio as we walk in the door, again, no word of a lie, is the song Another One Bites the Dust.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
So, and that's when it clicked in for me that we are all going to bite the dust, and not to be morbid about it, but to be happy about it, that there is something that we should be striving towards changing ourselves and improving our lives so that when it does all come to an end, that people look back on what we did fondly and respectfully. And the way to get there, I think, is love. I think it's just love. And I think you love, and I don't mean it in a creepy romantic way, but I mean, I think you have to love people. I think you have to love the joy of interacting with people. I think you have to love your employees. I think you have to love your colleagues. I think you have to love your partners and take care of people. And yes, you can do that by thinking, doing, and saying. Mm-hmm. But that, I think, is at the heart of just a great life and a great legacy for everybody, whether it's as a parent or as a boss or as an executive coach. Just love people. And that can sound really cheesy and hokey, but I really do think it is that simple.
Mike dropped RonTite.com or ThinkDoSay.com. That's where you go to buy this book and get it for everyone you know for Christmas, because or Hanukkah or birthdays or whatever you're into, man.
Earth Day. Arbor Day. That's a great opportunity.
All of the days. Valentine's Day, we just heard him talk about love. Ron, you are a treat. You are a delight. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. This is incredible. Awesome. And thanks to Roberto.
Thank you.